So who with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 84. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Stormtroopers, Beyond the Armor authors Ryder Windham and Adam Bray. We get an awesome interview with them. But as always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Danya.
Hey, everyone. Sorry if I sound a little bit croaky, because I'm still getting over a bit of a cold.
That's not good. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including The Legends of Luke Skywalker, which is the one I just finished reading. It's kind of awesome, guys. Like, the whole idea of Legend series meets canon and, like, just, like, far-fetched story. This book is just amazing. It made me smile, like, through the whole thing. It's awesome. Check it out. Even if you don't do Audible, go ahead and get the free book, and you can cancel right away. Get it on us, because we're here. You know, they sponsor us, and they're awesome. We also have launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. We have some cool perks like Discord chat, where you can join us in our chat room. Also, join us in our recording studio. So as we record, you can hear all the mistakes I make, which is way too many. Right? There you go. You can join us for our movie nights. Next up is going to be the Clone Wars movie and our After Dark episodes, which are going to be things that are completely off topic, but still somehow Star Wars related, usually. Mostly. If you can't afford to support us on Patreon, that's all right. We have some awesome merch for sale, including really cool Resistance Radio t-shirts and button packs. I will say those t-shirts might be pretty cool to wear to the premiere of The Last Jedi in December, but maybe not. Anyway, it's time for the news. So the biggest bit of news this week, I'll tell you this, is actually not necessarily Star Wars related news. It kind of is. It's what if Disney purchased Fox. We've seen this all over the place because of Marvel and because of Star Wars, that we can definitely benefit from it. Specifically, we've been asking for an original, theatrical release version of Star Wars, original trilogy. But Disney has yet to release it. And the main reason for this is the distributor of the original films is Fox, 20th Century Fox. So, Danya, what do you think? What would happen if, obviously, this has wide-reaching things with, like, X-Men series and Fantastic Four coming into the Marvel Universe, but then also for us, like, this is a Star Wars thing. We might get the original theatrical release Star Wars films.
There is, obviously, the potential for that to happen. It's really difficult to say whether or not they will or won't do it. Because even though Disney obviously own Lucasfilm now, they still have a fairly good relationship with George Lucas. They still have a very good relationship with, like, some of the original people who were involved in those films and with Lucasfilm just in general. And George Lucas has always made, like, his opinions very, very clear about, like, the special editions and so on. It's very difficult to know whether or not they'd go against that and potentially damage that relationship. But I actually, we know, everyone knows my thoughts on whether or not they should or shouldn't do it. I think, particularly from a historical standpoint, they should absolutely be made available. That's not to say that the special editions in their own right aren't their own part of cinematic history now. They are. They absolutely are, and they're just as valid and just as important. But the originals, without those additions, without those, particularly for, like, A New Hope, that film won multiple Academy Awards at the time for its theatrical release. But from a historical standpoint, it's something that I still very much want, because it's film history. It should be experienced as close to the film that actually won those awards as possible. So if this made, even if it's not like a full merger of the two, but there's some kind of agreement worked out. I would love to see it happen. There's huge reaching implications about the idea of a Disney-Fox merger just in general. I know that the news, the talks have stalled for now. They're not currently talking about a potential merger at this point in time, but apparently they could be revisited. And I know that this is specifically for like the film and TV branch of Fox, not including their news stations, because obviously Disney owns ABC and other parts that like are involved in specifically news, and they also own ESPN, don't they?
Disney? Yes, they do. Yeah, Disney. Yeah, owns
so
ESPN.
They would then directly be competing with Fox News and Fox's news stations, and also Fox Sports channels. So I know that that's not included in these discussions. So I don't know. There's a lot that would have to be worked out, but you know, I really do want to see a theatrical re-release.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see if there's a theatrical release, you know, between Disney, if they can come up with some type of partnership between them. We know that Disney has worked with Sony, or for Marvel has worked with Sony for Spider-Man. So we'll see if they ever come together, if they can't just go ahead and actually purchase the company, if there's some type of marriage between them to release the original films.
Yeah, the thing I'd be worried about specifically is that they'd like there'd be a huge monopoly specifically on like certain parts of the market if these two companies merged. And for me, this doing that has its own pitfalls and implications in that you don't get as wide-reaching a view of different media if one company owns so many different smaller branches of media production companies underneath them. You know, I don't think it's good for one company to own a monopoly on so many, because then you're almost specifically getting like a singular viewpoint the whole time. So there are certain aspects of this that concern me outside of a Star Wars perspective. But from the Star Wars specific perspective, if it made a theatrical release, a theatrical re-release more possible, then I would absolutely want that. But that's purely selfish on my part for like wanting to preserve a part of cinematic history.
You know, I agree with you on that. Moving on to the next bit of news, Star Wars 40th Anniversary Deluxe Vinyl to be released on three vinyl records, including on the third one, a hologram Death Star. I kind of wish that Ben was on the episode so we can talk about this, because who doesn't love the original Star Wars A New Hope soundtrack? You know, it's been turned into a disco album and everything else, and it's John Williams' essential, you know, it's the score that kind of started the whole Star Wars saga. And this last, the third record that has the hologram Death Star while it spins, looks absolutely awesome.
Yeah, this looks so cool. I don't have anything that could play vinyl, but like, I actually just really love the presentation of this from the images that they've got. It looks like there's an accompanying like little book that seems to come with it, with a lot of photographs and stuff in it. So I actually am really, really interested to see what that would be like. I don't know. I kind of want to buy it just because it looks cool.
Yeah, it'll definitely be cool. And I know it's going to be a limited edition. It'll be released December 1st. So just before, you know, Last Jedi hits theaters, you'll be able to have the original soundtrack 40th anniversary, or original motion picture soundtrack, the 40th anniversary collector's edition, played through classic, you know, record player. I'm excited for it. I may be able to pick it up. I have a record player, but I don't have it hooked up because I have like 4 records and they're just kind of collecting dust mounted on the wall. Anyway. So this week was not a lot of news because we covered most of it last week. There's not a lot that came out. But the last bit is a new collection of clothing that looks absolutely amazing from Rag & Bone. Did you get a chance to look at any of the clothing here, Danya, from Rag & Bone?
Yes, I did.
I will say, before we dive into it, this stuff looks absolutely awesome. And if you get some, if you get any of these items, let us know. But only 100 of each of these items are being made. So the likelihood of one of us getting it might be a little slim. I will say, I think it's absolutely awesome. At least the guy stuff. Like, I think the girl stuff's cool too, but as much as I love those Force boots, you know, the LS Force boots in the Empire, I just can't imagine myself wearing them. But they look really cool. They look really cool. So tell us what you thought of this, Sonia.
So I actually really love the Hoth stuff. The Echo jacket and Hoth one that they've got, basically Hoth is sweater. Yeah. It's really nice. Like, it just looks really cool. What else did I really, really like from this collection? There was a Lightspeed jacket. Or they called it like Lightspeed jacket in Yavin 4, and I actually really like that as well. I mean, they all like they've got a riff on like specific moments and parts of like costumes that are already in the Star Wars universe. Like, there's a Hoth jacket and a Hoth like pant that is very obviously modeled after Leia's Hoth outfit, and is as like it's really, really close to what she actually wore, and I kind of really want it. I have no doubt that some of this is actually going to be unbelievably expensive.
Up to $1,200 for a piece.
Yeah, and so I'm like, yeah, I love this idea. I love that Rag & Bone is teaming up with Lucasfilm and Disney's Force for Fashion initiative, which will be making donations to the Starlight Children's Foundation, which aims to improve the lives of children like all over the world. But like, I don't have that kind of disposable income to spend on this clothing, as cool as it is. I would say that like there's a couple of pieces, like there's a Stormtrooper sweatshirt that I would probably wear. I actually would see myself more realistically buying the, is it Pozu? The guys who do the actual, like, they made Rey's actual boots for The Last Jedi and for The Force Awakens. And for me, like, I would be more likely, I think, to buy one of those. Just because I think they're really cool, and also they are pretty much the exact ones from the film as well, and they're the exact ones that Rey wears and stuff like that, and they also look unbelievably comfortable. So, and they're not unrealistically expensive. Like, Rey's boots are like £150. Poe's boots are on there. They're £200. And then they've got like a couple of different resistance themed shoes in like different colors. But I don't know. It like they're for me. They're slightly more like realistic in terms of like being affordable. Whereas, as much as I absolutely love these Rag & Bone pieces, for me, as a Star Wars fan, they're not as accessible because the price is way out of my range of what I would be willing to spend, particularly on pieces that maybe I'd wear once or twice, I'd have to have a specific occasion to go and wear them. I couldn't see myself wearing them in isolation with other items of clothing that I already own. I would have to the Hoth stuff based off Leia's Hoth outfit, for example. I would probably wear that if I was doing a Leia Hoth costume, which would mean that I'd have to have a specific event to go to in order to wear it, and the cost versus usage for me. I have to have there has to be a cost benefit.
No, I agree. Weighing up
with it. So as beautiful and as incredible as these are, the price range is just out for me. But if you do have a significant amount of disposable income, then go wild, because these are actually really cool.
I will say, one of the things I really love about it is the RB1 Force and Jedi shoes, as well as the Stormtrooper shoes, which is on the first link I posted next to the Stormtrooper sweatshirt. This makes me miss Velcro shoes. You know, the two types of shoes that they had, and when you look at the shoes of the Stormtroopers from Force Awakens, they have this kind of ribbed Velcro look type on them. But these shoes, make them with Velcro. I miss Velcro shoes. I don't know about you, but I don't like tying shoelaces. If I can use Velcro for shoelaces, I think that would be awesome. Maybe that's my my inner 3-year-old coming out. But I like the Velcro-ness of them. All right. Well, on to our spotlight topic. Well, welcome, guys. Thank you for coming on Resistance Radio Podcast. We're a Star Wars podcast. And can I start off by saying your book is absolutely amazing?
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm here with my co-host, Danya. Hey.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's nice to virtually meet you. But yeah, I've been poring over this book for the last week or so. I started a new job, so I've been reading it in between having started that, and just I was so impressed. There's so much detail in this, and I'm absolutely obsessed already. I actually wanted to know the little there's a little envelope at the back of this book that has some reproduction bits in it for different bits of memorabilia and historical bits from Stormtroopers in the franchise. Was that one of your ideas to include something like that? Or was that the publisher who decided to go with that?
Adam, if it's okay, I'll answer that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
That the book was packaged by Becker and Mayer. I had previously worked on a book called The Complete Vader, which was similar in format in that it was essentially a coffee table book about all things Darth Vader. It was a nonfiction book covering everything from movies to merchandise. And the book was filled with hand-tipped in features, meaning envelopes and reproductions of ephemera and posters and manuscript bits, so that So at the outset, Adam and I knew that the book would feature different tipped-in features, or it would include these features. But I can only speak for myself on this one. I don't recall suggesting maybe I did. I remember. You'll have to tell me, because I don't have the book handy. What are the Tipton features in the back of the book?
So they have got a reproduction of the Kenner Stormtrooper action figure backer card.
Okay.
A reproduction of the 1979 Star Wars comic strip by Russ Manning and Steve Gerber. A reproduction of a storyboard from Return of the Jedi with the biker scouts of the from Endor. And there's also a reproduction of the Stormtrooper mask that came on the back of one of the Kellogg's cereal boxes.
Yes, the mask was, I remember, I mean, both Adam and I prepared lists of suggestions of what we hoped they might include in the book. And I do remember this, the specifically suggesting the paper mask. The comic strips I knew would be featured inside of the book. I didn't know that that would be an insert, you know, just like a special little bonus insert. But yeah, Adam and I, the editor encouraged us to propose things that we would like to see in the book. But I think both Adam and I mean, from talking with Adam about it, we really didn't know everything that would be in the book until we saw the book.
Right. Yeah, I'm a bit of an action figure collecting addict. So I remember suggesting the action figure card. I think that might be the only thing that survived of my suggestions for those includes in the back.
Very cool. So the book, it covers pretty much everything I can think of from Stormtroopers, all the way from the original Stormtroopers in, you know, Star Wars A New Hope from 77, all the way to the new stuff coming out in The Last Jedi. How much did you guys have input from Rian Johnson or Lucasfilm for information for the new films? Because I know there's stuff even from, like, Legends and even, like, the Dark Horse comic stuff in there. Did you get, like, special access to any of that information for The Last Jedi, or were you just going off, like, what's been released?
Sure. Yeah, I worked on the second half of the book, so I did the section covering the new movies. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think I really had any input from Lucasfilm or the film people on that. Apart from I did ask the guys on the story group, Leland Chi and Pablo Hidalgo, a couple of obscure questions about some Rogue One stuff. You see there's a new creature that the Stormtroopers ride on Jeddah in Rogue One. But the only time you actually see it in the movie, unfortunately, is in a background scene when they're in the holy city. In the background, if you almost have to know where it is already, you can kind of see it blurry in the back. But they'd actually filmed some scenes that were deleted, one of the many deleted scenes from Rogue One, where Jyn and Cassian and K2SO actually watch a caravan of I guess of some worshippers going up to the city with some stormtroopers doing patrols on these creatures. But so I found out about that through the story group guys. But apart from that, what the publishing side of Lucasfilm's doing is very well. I think much of the company that's in San Francisco is very separate from what's going on with the UK. So it was because of all the secrecy involved in these movies, it was hard to get advanced access. So most of what I have, it's either what was available at the time or using my personal contacts with actors and contributors, like, you know, just talking to them on Facebook and stuff, and piecing together interviews, kind of cross-referencing them to figure out some clues.
That's what I was wondering, just because I went through the whole book over the last week, and I love that you've included even some of the stuff from The Last Jedi, which is not out yet, especially like the Praetorian Guard and the new, I guess it's the Stormtrooper that has the laser axe. Because the action figures have since been released, and obviously you've been working on this before. But what did your guys take on the characters from the Legends, like Stormtroopers? I noticed you guys had stuff from back when Dark Horse used to do Disney's, or not Disney, Lucasfilm's Star Wars comics. You have some of the more unique Stormtroopers inside here, and you kind of go into them.
When Adam and I began working on the book, I worked on what the sequences, I mean, the chapters related to 1970s up through the early 1990s. We didn't make any distinction in our first draft about Legends versus canon. That was something that Lucasfilm wanted in the final book. so that as far as, I mean, from, you know, from my perspective, it was more like, you know, here was the first published appearance of a stormtrooper in a Marvel comic in the 1970s, or here's what we knew about stormtroopers based on, you know, information authorized by Lucasfilm on this date in 1978. And I think, I mean, Legends versus Canon is, by my take, it's nothing more than, it's about branding. It's about, you know, Disney bought Lucasfilm. They wanted a fresh start on things, and which I understand. I mean, it's like, it makes sense that, you know, what Disney and Lucasfilm, you know, that they, you know, should be free. You know, what, once the decision was made to make new movies, that they wouldn't have to be wed to all of this material that had been developed over the years. So as far as how it was all distinguished, the problem, I think, in reading the book is that while reading the Stormtrooper book, it almost looks like you're reading, you know, there might be a chapter that's related to 1970s Marvel comics. And when you read it, you think like, oh, this is all Legends. It's like, yes, but it wasn't Legends until about 2 years ago. or 3 years ago, or whenever Disney Lucasfilm deemed there should be a distinction between, you know, material published, I guess, before, I forget whether it was like before 2014. So anyway, as far as our take on it, I mean, I think I could speak for Adam on this too. It just comes down to, you know, the book is about stormtroopers as presented, you know, as they've been appeared over the years, and but it was an editorial decision to break up or distinguish what Disney Lucasfilm now considers Legends versus canon.
Okay.
With some of the stormtroopers that are now part of Legends, or some of the ones that are kind of contained in the book, we know that they're slowly reintroducing some things that were classified as Legends back into canon. For both of you, like, is there any particular stormtrooper that you would love to see shift from Legends back into canon?
I think, you know, I my fondness is probably for the things that are from the films, more than anything. But I, as someone who, you know, kind of grew up playing those Dark Forces video games and those earliest Star Wars video games, it would be maybe fun to see some of those things come in, where kind of a cross between a stormtrooper and a droid. Although we kind of have recently in Star Wars Rebels, they've got those I forget what they're called, they're like the training assault Imperial droids that Thrawn practices with, that spars with on his ship, which those actually they had I had talked to I think it was Killian Plunkett, the art director for Rebels, and that was one of the few things that they'd actually told me about it in advance that was coming at the time. And he told me that those are based on the Dark Forces Dark Trooper droids. And also the what are they called? The Death Troopers in Rogue One. Those are kind of based on things that were, you know, already in Star Wars that are now considered Legends. Like, they're kind of a cross between the Shadow Troopers and if you read Pablo Hidalgo's visual guide, they're supposed to be also a mix of, you know, those the Death Trooper zombie troopers that were in kind of the horror novels that Del Rey put out a while back.
I mean, from my perspective, it's hard for me to, discuss canon versus Legends with any great degree of seriousness, because it's kind of like asking me, do you prefer this fictional character over that fictional character? when they're kind of the same character, or, you know, specifically with stormtroopers. I mean, I working on the book, I found it really interesting that I didn't realize until I started working on the book how many variants of stormtroopers appeared in the syndicated comic strip in the late 70s and early 80s, where they're just stormtroopers wearing like firefighter costumes, or unmasked stormtroopers who were cutting down forests using sort of laser-like chainsaw devices. And seeing that, I mean, I was familiar with all that material, but, you know, when I look at them, it's like when I never thought, oh, gee, I wish they'd make an action figure out of that, or, gee, I guess that character doesn't exist anymore. Because it's like, well, they are fictional characters. I think, I don't know, like if I had to choose a favorite stormtrooper, I think I've always been kind of fond of Anthony Forrest's performance as the move along stormtrooper in the first movie, and can't quite articulate why. I mean, he's just, you know, he's a guy doing his job, directing traffic, and he's got a good line. He's got a, he acts, he's on screen with Alec Guinness. He's very cool. So,
so any book on stormtroopers wouldn't be complete, at least not in the Star Wars fandom, without talking about the 501st. And in the novel, in the book, you guys do talk a little bit about the 501st and who they are and what they've done. What was your interactions with them while you guys were working on the book? I know it looks like you had interviews with Alba Johnson, the founder of the 501st, and a couple other people from the 501st that did the Force Awakens premiere. But what interactions did you guys have with any of them from the 501st?
Well, I know writers probably had a lot more interaction with them than I have, because I'm kind of new to this. But I did write the sections on the 501st. So one of the guys that I interviewed was Clint Randall, who he had gotten access to the visuals and the plans for the Forced Order stormtroopers for The Force Awakens long before any of the fans ever, you know, saw what they looked like. And so he had worked, I guess the 501st and Lucasfilm were working together to have them, these guys out in Arizona, I think in Southern California, create the costumes so that they could come for events that they were going to be having for the premiere and for, I think it was San Diego Comic-Con and some other things. So they actually made these costumes really early. And it was funny, it was on one of my book tours, it might have been for, I can't remember, it might have been Ultimate Star Wars that Ryder and I also wrote together. So Clint was at one of my book signings out in Arizona long before the movie came out, and he was already in a First Order costume. So it made a big impression, and it was a big hit. And so I got to know Clint from that, and saw his photos with, you know, J.J. Abrams and different cast members, because he went out, he was invited to the premiere and saw the movie with all those actors sitting next to them all, and had these really cool experiences. And so I included an interview with him in the book, as well as different folks, you know, talked about some of the 501st members in the UK that were actually invited very quietly to participate in the filming of the movie. So actually in these new movies, that Lucasfilm doesn't talk about it much, but there are actually 501st members in costumes. I think they're the costumes that Lucasfilm provided rather than the ones they made themselves when they're in the movie. But so it was very interesting to find out how much the 501st has actively been involved in the creation of the movies and the animated shows all along. It's just often we still don't even hear about how they're utilized.
Yeah, I'd say the one part of the book that I genuinely envied Adam that he got to write would be about the 501st. And I mean, just because although I didn't work on the sections of the book related to the 501st, I thought that, the book is yet another celebration of the people who worked on the Brian Muir and Liz Moore, the sculptors who created the first Star Wars costume, to Ralph McQuarrie for his concepts for the initial stormtrooper. But more than anyone, I thought for everyone who's designed and worked on stormtroopers, the 501st Legion and the way they have adopted costuming and taking it to the level of let's do charity work, let's do let's raise money, let's for good causes, let's visit children in hospitals. They have the biggest hearts, and it's a very costly gift to the 501st, but I hope they enjoy it because it was I know Adam hoped too, that, I mean, the book was a tribute to them as much as anyone else, maybe even more than anybody else. I'm a big fan of the 501st.
Yeah, I think that was one of the fun things about this book that set it apart to me. Very much a gift that we can give to a lot of people, that have been involved in things that you don't get to hear their names talked about a lot, particularly the 501st, but some of the artists and the fans. One of the fun things that I was excited about that I got to include, and I had to try several times because it kept getting cut or moved around and pushed off the page, was a friend of mine, Xenia, who's lives in Russia, who's a really popular fan artist on Twitter. She just is constantly posting these drawings and sketches and paintings that she does of Star Wars Rebels and various characters. And just the fans love them. I mean, she's so great that, people at Lucasfilm, have, I think, been commissioning her for fan drawings and stuff. She's just a fan doing these things. And so I got to know her very early on when she started posting stuff on social media. And so it was really fun to be able to actually include one of her art pieces that she did and put it towards the end of the book. So I tried to, friends and people that I admired their work, I tried to include them and, give them credit and mention as many people as I could that I think have really contributed to Star Wars and Stormtroopers and the fan experience, people that have been good to the fans. So it was fun to talk to like Sam Witwer and David Collins, voice actors, and David is known for his incredible insight in the music of Star Wars, and to talk to them about their voice acting experience and to give them that credit and just to give back to them, to give them some recognition for the things they do.
Yeah, the 501st, absolutely amazing. And as soon as I opened up this book, that was one of the first things that came to mind, was just like, I have to take this to the next meetup I have with any of those guys, just so they can look through it, because I know a few of them haven't, if you haven't seen it yet. But overall, what was your favorite thing? I know Donya asked about favorite stormtrooper, but what was your favorite experience while working on this book? Because I know you guys have worked on lots of other Star Wars books, and I think, Adam, you did the Rebels book recently. I think it was last year or the year before. But what was your favorite experience working on the Stormtroopers Beyond the Armor book specifically?
For me, it's definitely the interviews, to get to talk to different people. Lucasfilm provided Killian Sam Plunkett the art design on Rebels and Clone Wars, and D. Bradley Baker. And then I reached out to a bunch of other people on my own. Got to talk to people like Terrell Whitlatch, who was one of the artists on the prequel trilogy. She basically designed all the creatures you saw in The Phantom Menace and in Attack of the Clones. And her unused creature art designs have continued to be utilized, repurposed in the Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. And, you know, anything new, it often includes her creature drawings and concepts. But she had kind of redesigned the dewback that the Sand Troopers ride in the special edition of A New Hope. And so getting to talk to her and interview her about that process was just a fun excuse to get to talk to her, because I've always admired her illustrations. She's got a wonderful book on, I think it's the Wildlife or Natural History of Star Wars. It's a green book. It looks like it's made out of dewback leather. And it's just got all these great drawings of Star Wars creatures. So I definitely recommend that book if listeners don't have it. But so to be able to talk to all these contributors and 501st people like Albin Johnson, who founded the organization, was definitely the best part of it for me.
I think it's, you know, anytime I'm getting paid to reread old Star Wars comic strips, that's always good for me. The first thing I thought of when I was offered, the editor Delia Grieve at Becker and Mayer offered me the assignment, my very first thought was, this will be a great excuse for me to correspond with Brian Muir again, because Brian Muir's, again, I mentioned earlier, the sculptor who created the Stormtrooper armor. And I had previously gotten to know Brian by way of working on the Complete Vader, because he also crafted Vader's armor and made and sculpted Vader's helmet. And I thought too that it's an opportunity to set the record straight about who did what for creating the Stormtrooper armor, because there are some people out there in the world who claim that they did create parts of the armor, and in fact they didn't. So that that they claim that they sculpted it, and it's like, no, actually Brian Moore and Liz Moore, they were the sculptors of the Stormtrooper armor. So it was a good, you know, I enjoyed, I asked Brian questions that had never occurred to me to ask before, just about, you know, very sort of very detail oriented bits about, what tools did he use, or what kind of, you know, there was one question I asked about the Stormtrooper's backplate, where I said, you know, what was, you know, because I said, I know that you were working from Ralph McQuarrie's drawings, but the drawings didn't have any rear views that I could find. And I said, did you just sort of make that up, or was there like a reason? Were you thinking of it, something? And he said, no, you know, just, you know, you broke up, you know, you used certain shapes that looked good, and you used a wooden mold, and you had to get it together, because, you know, the thing that most people, I think that what will surprise people who read about the making of the Stormtrooper, the original Stormtrooper armor, was just how fast it all came together. I mean, this was, it was cobbled together, you know, I think from start to finish within, it was just, I mean, definitely within 2 months or so. I mean, it was a lot of work, but that done in a very short amount of time.
Very cool. Donnie, do you have any other questions for writer Adam?
I kind of want to ask a little bit, like, what, obviously you've talked a little bit about your sort of favorite parts that you had of this book. Was there anything that was just surprising for you to really learn about what you were putting together that you also thought might be surprising for other fans as well? That was like something new that maybe you didn't really know before, or like, was there any, is there anything that particularly stands out to you as one of those like big things that you're like,
Well, there was one thing. I mean, I corresponded with Anthony Forrest, who I mentioned earlier too. He was the actor who played the move along stormtrooper. And I mean, I'd read about, I'd read interviews with Anthony before, but, and here I will be a bit of a tease. I'll just say that, you know, it's like, if you want to find out more about his experience, buy the book, read the book, because, you know, it's just like the way he told the story, or I mean, told his story about how he, you know, where he was on the set at the time that he got the call. Because what I mean, it's interesting to note that he was a last minute decision to put on that armor, and how that came about. It was just, I mean, I was familiar with his story before, but, you know, just reading his own account of it when he sent me, he just wrote it up. And when I read it, I thought, this is really like, it's very insightful and very personal. It's just, I will say the thing that makes Anthony Forrest, I think, especially unique as stormtroopers go in the first movie was that I think he was, I mean, everybody who was on the, of everyone who wore the, a stormtrooper costume on the Tunisian shoot, I think he was the only English actor, or maybe the only person who spoke English, because everybody else, essentially, Lucasfilm was hiring locals as extras, and their identities may be lost to time. So as far as, like, if you wanted to know, see, what was it like being wearing that stormtrooper costume in Tunisia? Anthony Forrest is pretty much the guy you want to talk to, because I don't know. I tried tracking down others, but it was interesting. I mean, for me, it was just, I can't say it was like a surprise, but Danya, to be fair, I've been doing this for like, you know, a long time. There's not much I don't know. So that, I really did enjoy Anthony Forrest's account of how he became a stormtrooper.
Yeah, I think for me, there were a bunch of things. I was living overseas for much of the last decade. So in terms of, you know, publishing and a lot of tie-in material, I didn't get to consume it as it came out because it wasn't available to me. It was only later on when I came back to the U.S. But so in doing my research, finding out how much everything was actually integrated and tied together was a little surprising, because a lot of the focus in the hype about Star Wars has been, you know, how about the story group and how that works. And they are great, and they are responsible for a lot of really great synergy in tying the stories together. But it was interesting to see back then during the prequel era how well some things were tied together, that, you know, they were introducing characters and new kinds of clone armor and things as much as a year or two before the movies came out. The first time we'd see some of those things was often in the comic books or novels and toys. So that was fascinating to me. The fact that how important Hasbro has been, even in the modern era, you know, even after Kenner, in terms of the development of Star Wars, that Hasbro was responsible for the Tartakovsky Clone Wars animated series, that they actually came to Lucasfilm and said, "Hey, we'd like to continue selling toys between the movies, but we need, you know, something on TV between them to keep this hype going. And we've worked with Tartakovsky, this animation director, before, and so we think, you know, he should do an animated series for you. And so Lucasfilm, you know, took their suggestion, and actually Hasbro provided a lot of designs for the characters in the show. And it's particularly impactful because a lot of Clone Wars, the Dave Filoni's Clone Wars, is derived from those designs and using some of the same voice actors. So we actually can thank Hasbro for the impetus, the start of Star Wars animation in the modern era. So that was fascinating for me to see that the toy company continued to really drive things.
All right. Thank you guys so much for this interview. I know I love this book, and we talk about books all the time on the show. Is there any last words you guys like to share to anyone listening about Stormtroopers Beyond the Armor? And since this is one of the many books on the journey to the Last Jedi.
Adam, you go right ahead.
Sure, yeah. Well, I would say buy it. go to the store and flip through and, you know, have a look at it. I think fans that see it will love it. I've been getting a lot of great feedback. I just heard from a bunch of the actors in the UK that played Stormtroopers in the new movies. I think they had just found the book, and they were also excited because it actually mentions a lot of those actors by name. So that was great to hear. But it makes a great Christmas present. And I'd say, if listeners would like to follow me on social media and see what else I'm doing, because at this minute, I am writing two other books that will be out early next year. But follow me on Twitter and Facebook. It's @AuthorAdamBray.
I just like to say, I'm looking forward to seeing Star Wars fans and friends in El Salvador next month at its Star Wars fans El Salvador. They're I think it's their third convention, and I went to the first one 2 years ago, and I really can't wait to see Stormtroopers there again. Support your local 501st. They're good people, as are the Rebel Legion members and the Mandalorian mercs. I like everybody in Star Wars costumes, so that, you know, does good work for kids. I keep a relatively low profile on social media. So I guess find me if you can. I am working on a project right now, which I'm very excited about. I'm working on a novel for an upcoming virtual reality computer game, and the name of the game is Scraper. And if you go to www.scrapernetwork.com, you can at least see some initial teaser image of what Scraper is all about. And and I've talked too much. I'm with Adam. We always look forward to seeing Star Wars fans. So
awesome. Well, thank you guys very much. And we'll be releasing this episode this week, and I'll make sure I email you guys a link to it so you can check it out. Donnie, any last words?
No, just thank you very much for coming on. Also, thank you for all the mentions of the 501st over here in the UK, because I think sometimes they get forgotten ever so slightly, but obviously they're my 501st, the guys over here. I actually know quite a few of the people involved. Actually know one of the Sabines that work with them, so it was really nice to hear them getting a lot of shout outs. So
I do have a gripe, with the 501st in the UK. So what I do, and which is that I have repeatedly tried to, and I know there are 501st members out there in the UK who, because I've corresponded with them, and I'm really hoping that members will get involved in the World Blood Drive, which is the second Saturday in June. Star Wars fan club members all over the world participate in the annual World Blood Drive. I forget the date, but it's the second Saturday in June. It'll be our fifth annual international event. And to date, I don't think the UK 501st has participated. I have begged, I have wheedled, I have bribed. And so anyway, now I'm hoping they're going to be just shamed into saying, oh, you know, what? He wants the UK to be part of the World Blood Drive. Absolutely. It would be wonderful. So there, that's my special message for you.
I particularly know the people involved in the Welsh branch of the UK 501st. So I will definitely be nudging those guys to be hey,
yes, please.
Come on.
Yeah, and you can find out more too. There's a Facebook page for the World Blood Drive, and also www.worldblooddrive.com or .org. I can't remember, but it's
.org.
Yeah, it's all about voluntary blood donations, and if you know Star Wars, I've been donating blood since I was in high school. When I realized, I can somehow parlay my connections with Star Wars fandom into promoting blood donations. That's just like, it's the most fun a boy can have. Or that anybody. The only thing that's more fun than giving blood is getting other people to give blood. It's true.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks very much.
Fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for
Thank
coming
you.
On.
Hey, bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. As always, I am Mikey B.
And I'm Donya.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.